We're definitely not included in this because I sound like a baby. A cat lady. Well, hello there.
Hello there.
And welcome to This Is Awful, a podcast. I am Allison. I'm a true crime buff.
And I'm Trevor, her husband and co-conspirator.
Co-host, co-all the things.
Sure.
So typically we record 3 times a month. We discuss true crime in our office while our cats argue, and then we record it and we share it. But this month I owed you a bonus, so this is a 4-episode month. So I guess congratulations / I'm sorry.
Congratulations / I'm sorry is a shirt I need to have made. It explains my life.
I use it a lot, actually. Yeah. It's surprising frequency. Also, if you're not listening to these episodes in date order, you will want to listen to the Smiley Face Killer Theory episode before this one. I'm just telling you now so that you don't listen through all of the intro and business and then get to the episode and get pissed. Because I've done that. I hate it. It makes me very upset. Okay, so.
Yes.
Business. Awful Waffles, I have packed up all your swag. I just need to get it in the mail, which I'm asking Trevor to help me with because I will forget it for the rest of my life without help.
Lucky for you, I have an Amazon return, so I have to do that at the same time. So, yeah.
Cool. I'll send those guys with you. But I'm really excited for you guys to get these. They're very cute, and I hope you enjoy them. If you would like to become an Awful Waffle, which is to say, join our Patreon.
Yes.
Then you can do so by going to patreon.com/thisisawfulpod. We use that to support our cause of the week, as well as cover some of our operating costs of the show, because we don't make a profit from it. We've committed to not.
Yeah. We're not here to profit off victimization.
Yeah, this is a labor of love, because it's something that we like to talk about, things that we feel like need talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. We're having these conversations anyway. We might as well record them and put them out into the ether.
Because everybody needs to hear what we have to say. just kidding. If you guys don't know me personally, just so you know, I have crippling social anxiety in real life so badly that I regularly get pangs of social anxiety after we put up an episode because I am certain I said the wrong thing at some point.
Yeah.
And I know I will. Like, it's just a fact. I've said the wrong thing at some point that, like, somehow conveyed what I didn't mean or that I didn't understand the concept or whatever. It's very intimidating.
Yeah.
Having social anxiety and being a podcaster, it's a conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's battle. Kind of like a therapy session for you as far as like...
No, it's just two...
Exposure just therapy two for social...
just duking it out inside. That's all it is. On another note of business...
Yes.
Actually, very similar note. I have a correction.
Oh, yeah.
It's my first real correction that I've received from not a family member.
Yeah.
So I'm actually... kind of pumped about it. I'm not excited that I was wrong, but I am excited that people feel like they can tell me when I'm wrong.
Not just that you were wrong, because it was my episode. And
no,
I
but
was
it's something
too.
I said.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't the one that did the research.
Yeah. Clearly, I didn't do it.
Stop. You did too. Well, it's something I said it in like so in passing that I was just really impressed that she picked it up. Yeah. So in our JonBenet Ramsey case, I was ranting, and in passing, I said something like, her parents are both dead now, so it doesn't matter anyways. And because our listeners are my people, they were like, oh, you seem to be missing some information that I have. You need it. So I got an Instagram message from Bonnie, and she let me know that John Ramsey is actually alive. He's still alive, and he's remarried and everything. And I'm pretty sure I knew that at some point.
Yeah.
But it's been so long, and I didn't, like I said, I didn't research before. Because it wasn't my episode and I didn't, I was so cocky. I thought I knew the case well enough that I could just like throw the facts out and just be right.
Well,
that
was, I didn't correct you because it was kind of just like in passing comment and I didn't think too much about it. And also the point of the episode wasn't diving into his life or really
I know,
anything. So
but
I,
we were, un- but we yes, were not we, factually correct.
I like the correction.
So I love that Bonnie messaged us. I legit was excited.
Yeah.
And I was like, can I send you some stickers as like a thank you and for helping us be like honest? And she was like, oh, sure. I'm new to podcasts. This is great. It was cute. I'm excited that she's going to get those. So yeah, thank you, Bonnie, for helping us and listening and participating.
If you ever catch us saying anything that's untrue, go ahead and correct us. We love making sure that we're as accurate as possible. Though we try not to be too heavy on details in many episodes. If you have a correction, please feel free to email us or, you know, hit us up on any of our socials and we will be happy to correct the record.
I should say, we do put details in here. We just, we purposely don't put in details we can't, like, fully research. So if we didn't have a chance to dig into it, we try not to bring it up.
Yeah.
It's a good rule to use in general. If you don't know about it, maybe don't.
Don't speak about it.
Okay, so there's that.
Okay.
And now I'm going to do our traditional blanket warning.
Yes, please.
So yeah, we are a true crime podcast. So that means every episode we'll discuss elements of crime. So this episode may include discussions of violence, death, assault, abuse, oppression, addiction, and other potential triggers. If we are ever going to discuss something in detail, or if it's something that may be unusually upsetting, we do try to add another trigger warning before that. We do also believe in the power of swears, so swears ahead.
Yeah. I noticed, though, I think I mentioned this to you.
You did in the
We always, like, warn that there will be swears, and I realized, listening back at some of our episodes, we don't swear all that much because most of the stuff that I end up cutting out is what's laced the most with profanity.
Yeah.
So, yes, swears ahead, but just understand, we curse at, like, sailors.
Yeah, our household
is. We just also edit.
All about it.
At least a little bit out of these episodes, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, congratulations / I'm sorry.
New t-shirt.
We're just going to use that forever.
Yeah.
So, sources are BadgerHerald.com, WISSports.net, JSOnline.com, MarquetteWire.com, and then also, please reference our last episode for those references, because or for those sources, because we use those, I use those. In this one, too, it's just that I additionally, you get it. Look at the show notes.
Can I make a prediction?
Yeah.
This case takes place in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Good job. So this is a continuation off of last week, because I wanted to cover so much in one episode that it turned into too many hours.
Yeah.
I specifically wanted to talk about this case because I think it's a great flashlight to look back at the smiley face killer theory debacle with. So I'm just going to jump right in.
Okay.
Luke Holman was a 21-year-old student at University of Wisconsin La Crosse in 2006. He was tall, had dark hair, a big smile, and honestly, he kind of made me think of my big brother.
Okay.
In looks, which will make sense to you and nobody
and
else.
And nobody else, but okay.
In school, he made a point of including students around him that didn't feel it as easy to find their place.
Okay.
He was a really smart guy. He was an athlete. He loved to be involved in sports, but he also was aware that, like, his athleticism was impressive, but he wasn't going to be an athlete his whole life.
Yeah.
He didn't want to. It wasn't in the cards for him. So he started managing his own stock profile when he was in high school and, like, was great at it.
Yeah. So, like, he wanted to get into finances and stuff.
Yeah. He's just a smart kid.
Yeah.
And when I say also he was an athlete, I mean, he played college ball and he played it well.
Yeah.
He was also an only son of two very loving parents who were really supportive of his athletic career. In the fall of 2005, Luke had decided to transfer to UW La Crosse. So, because you're a sports ball person, I'll tell you the details.
Yes.
He had started out as a walk-on at Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And then he transferred after the coach left, and he was going to be, like, he had transferred to UW La Crosse.
Yeah.
From there. He was going to be playing on their team as a junior, and he was excited for this new start. And his mom described being wary, though, as she knew that college students had drowned in Mississippi in recent years. Like, it was a continuing issue. And every time she would kiss him goodbye as he left to go back to school for that whole year.
Yeah.
She would, you know, kind of say, oh, don't go by the water. And then he would laugh it off because he didn't like water, was not into swimming, was not his jam.
Yeah.
You get it.
Yep.
He never went to the riverside. None of his activities were near there. So he was always just like, Mom, it's fine. I'm not going to go by the water. You know exactly.
Yeah.
The teenage guy brush off.
Yep.
Although at this point, obviously, he's 21. I think that the teenage phase lasts.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
longer than the teenage years.
I think that 15 to 23-year-old male attitude is... Oh,
I think it's... Yeah. In general.
Yeah.
It's a phase. We've all been there. We all look back at those years and shudder.
Yeah.
On September 29th of 2006, Luke and a few of his friends had made plans for a kick-ass weekend. On Friday, they were going to go bar hop and celebrate Oktoberfest.
Okay.
And then on Saturday, they were going to go meet up for like a day-long golf outing. And he'd been planning this for a long time. He was really excited about it. And on Friday, they had a blast. Like, so much so that when the group decided to split up, Luke and his friend Austin Scott had decided to stay a little longer.
Okay.
And then they went to another bar after the whole group had split up called The Vibe. And that's the last bar that they were at.
Okay, yeah.
So the next morning was golf day, right? Yeah. It had been a party the night before for sure. I guess that year had been like 100,000 people in attendance at Oktoberfest. And the police had said it was like busy, but it was actually pretty tame. It was a pretty...
Yeah.
It was like a mellow Oktoberfest. Year. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Which is great.
Yeah.
It's rare you get a lot of people with alcohol and mellow.
Yeah.
But when Luke didn't show up for the tea time that he had arranged, his friends obviously noticed, but they were kind of like, we did just go out drinking. He stayed out later than us. Like, maybe
he's just sleeping it off.
Especially because I think you don't naturally jump. Well, okay. Other people don't naturally jump to the worst case scenario. Unfortunately, some brains do. I'm sorry if you have one like that. I say as another one with a brain like that.
I think, though, that even people that like that tend to jump to the worst conclusion, in the, like, in most, you don't realize how many times, like, yeah, you immediately go to just, like, assuming everything's fine. 1,000 times a day with things. And it'd be very easy to just be like, oh, yeah, he's probably just sleeping it off. You know, especially if most of them barely got to the tea time themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure they were all very kind much hungover. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Especially because, like, it's a morning tea time after partying, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Scott told the group that he had last seen Luke leaving the bar alone and intoxicated at about 12:30 the night before. As they played... And Luke didn't answer calls because they kind of started the game without him because they're like, he'll show up.
He can just join us late. Yeah.
But like it kind of kept getting later and later. And it went from like, he's probably just late to he's missed this. Like this is not like him. He's been pumped about this for weeks. He's the one that planned this and coordinated everything.
If nothing else, he would have texted back and let us know.
No answering phone calls, nothing. So they reported him missing.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's actually, I mean, for young college guys, that's actually really impressive. That
that's very responsible.
Like, super responsible. There's so many stories, especially in that kind of like demographic, of people being missing for days before the group kind of goes.
Especially in roommate cases. Yeah,
out of character for someone. Someone not coming back from a weekend is not unusual in college and stuff. Or like, you know, it's...
Yeah, because sometimes you stay at your parents instead. Like, you weren't going to go, and then last minute you decided to go. Or you met
someone, and you're at someone else's place or whatever.
Yeah, somebody invited you to a party or something.
Yeah, and we're talking 2006, so, like, even with cell phones and stuff, the chances of him accidentally ruining a phone or not having a charger for it is high. So, I mean, it is one of those things where I'm pretty impressed that by the end of the round, they're reporting him missing and not, you know, 2-3 days later.
I guess from what I could find, his parents were called and notified at 8 or 8:30-ish that evening.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, after they had been, like, everybody was trying to find him.
Yeah.
Everybody was looking for him. His teammates were looking for him. At that point, he'd been on the team for about a little over a year.
Yeah.
A bunch of his teammates were out with him that night.
Yeah.
And so... There's tons of people looking. It said like 100 volunteers or people on horseback.
It's impressive that people got onto it so quick.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not normally the case for, you know, a missing college student, especially like he's an adult. So most police departments will say, oh, well, you know, we aren't going to really do anything because you have the right to disappear as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So at most they will, you know, kind of post something about it, but it's not going to be a huge active search until the family really wants to get in on it.
I will say he also was somebody who I guess would regularly like check in.
Yeah.
So like somebody always knew where he was. He was not somebody who would just like
go
places. Yeah. He was also kind of a cautious person, it sounds like.
Okay.
He doesn't seem like somebody who is typically a huge risk taker.
Yeah, yeah.
On October 2nd, 2006, Luke's parents were given the news that they had dreaded. Luke's body had been recovered by divers 10 feet under the water on the south end of the River Park levee.
Oh.
So River Park obviously it's right next to the river. It's a park.
Yeah.
But it's about a half mile, like from where the bar is to the river is about a half mile. You have to cross the whole park to get there, okay?
Yeah.
It's not where the whole bar stretch is. The whole bar stretch is at an angle from the river.
Yeah.
So at no point are you walking towards the river to get to somewhere.
Yeah. So like where that strip is, it's parallel to the river at all times.
And at an angle.
And at an angle. So you would really have to like be walking purposely towards the river to get to the river.
Which is something that he had commented on before. He specifically had been like, even if you were drunk, he could not understand how you could accidentally drown in the river because he didn't see why anybody would go towards it. He said, if you were facing the river, obviously you're going the wrong direction. Like if you're drinking and you're looking at the river, turn around.
Yeah, you've gone the wrong way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely seems, you know, half mile's a little bit more than like you turn the wrong way and would stumble there kind of a thing. Like it's real easy. I don't know how, I'm sure everyone has the experience of, you know, stumbling home a little bit drunk.
Okay, not everyone, but many people.
We're
based in Utah. We need to.
I don't think we're like typical content for people in Utah, but
I mean, I guess it's true.
You know, like it's easy to kind of get lost in your thoughts while you're intoxicated. So if you turn the wrong way, you might realize two blocks later, like this is the wrong way for me to like be going.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, I actually have the a specific
time slows
incident in my mind of walking home from a bar and walking three blocks past my house because I was on the wrong side of the street. So I just kept walking because originally I was like,
not here.
Oh, I'll cross at the next crosswalk to get over to my thing. And I just kept walking. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I've like gone two blocks too far and had to cross and then come back. It's not unusual, but it would be, you know, that's a half mile is a ways.
That is a ways.
Yeah.
Luke was the 8th college-aged man in 9 years to drown in La Crosse. And the media was definitely aware of this.
Yeah.
Luke also looked like better person Tom Cruise. Like if someone turned off the punchable filter for Tom Cruise's face.
So it's young Tom Cruise. It's Tom Cruise before.
He's like 6'3" and he's a like basketball star. Yeah. So like he gets attention where he goes.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those cases where it's like, it's real easy for the media to be.
Yes. They
putting that
paid attention.
Up.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And his loved ones were putting his picture up, and he was a known athlete in the area.
Yeah. You know? I mean, a lot he of did things well on to, his team. To get that attention.
And while a lot of the cases we cover struggle from lack of coverage, in this case, I think it suffered from too much.
Yeah.
Mostly because this was when people first began to run with the idea of a serial killer because of those series of drownings.
Yeah.
And with the smiley face killer theory beginning the rounds, I think that's when it really started to pick up steam. They didn't, like, formally announce it as a theory for a while after this, but it's pretty close to that time.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for that time period. You know,
I think it was 2007 is when they announced their official theory. But this, I feel like I remember hearing rumblings about something going on, you know?
Yeah, it seems like it's a perfect storm of, like, this early internet kind of sleuthing era with a lot more, like, social media and pages that can kind of harness this and amplify it in an unhealthy degree.
Yeah, so I feel like from the get-go, investigation was muddied.
Yeah.
Luke's autopsy seemed pretty clear-cut.
Okay.
His cause of death was accidental cold water drowning.
Okay.
His blood alcohol level was recorded at 0.32%.
That's pretty high.
Yeah. With no trace of GHB, Rohypnol, or other debilitating drugs. That's what they said. Yeah.
But 0.32 is enough to be debilitating.
Yeah. On its yes. own. Yes. There was some external damage to Luke's body, like cuts and scrapes. But the medical examiner said that it was from his body being in the water and dragged with the current.
Yeah.
Like you said, no GHB would need to be present in his body for Luke to be incapacitated.
Yeah, that's four times the legal limit in yeah, most places. Yeah.
That's really high. The American Addiction Center says that 0.30 to 0.39%, they say, you may be unconscious and your potential for death increases. Along with a loss of understanding at this blood alcohol content, you'll also experience severe increases in your heart rate, irregular breathing, and may have a loss of bladder control. About 10% is when you start having slurred speech, just for yeah. reference. The investigation had begun before his autopsy
yeah.
had come back, and they had begun to retrace his steps that night. If you remember, the last person that Luke had been with that night was his friend, Austin Scott.
Yeah.
Initially, Scott had told them that he saw Luke last at 12:30 a.m. on September 30th, leaving the Verge alone.
Okay.
But he had also told police that Luke had gotten into a fight with a man in the bar earlier that night. Like, they'd gotten into an argument.
Yeah, the drunk guy argument, yeah.
And then later, and the guy had punched Luke. Yeah. And then he said that later in the night, the same guy had just, like, snuck up on him, decked him, and then just run off.
Huh.
Their mutual friends, however, had noticed that cut on yeah. Scott's face, and they said that Scott had told them that he was cut when he was punched by a man who was arguing with Luke, and then that he had actually been hit by a beer bottle, and then that it was three men and a beer bottle.
Okay.
So it's just kind of shifted.
Yeah.
When investigators interviewed him again, he told them this version of events, adding that after he was struck with the beer bottle,
yeah.
he immediately got up and walked straight home.
Huh.
When the interviewers told him that the beer that night at the Verge had been sold in plastic cups,
yeah.
not in bottles,
yeah.
He answered that he didn't know if his recollection was from his memory or from a dream.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like it could be accurately
yeah,
like, let from me, his recollection.
Because, let me
yeah.
clarify for you. It turns out that Scott had been cited for underage drinking at 10 that night. He was 18 at the time.
Yeah.
After a mounted officer had been flagged down by the night manager at the Riverfront Radisson.
Yeah.
Which, I like this night manager, by the way, because they had seen a young man coming from the river area, obviously intoxicated, bleeding from a cut on his head, and unexplained blood on his feet, huh. and was like, that guy probably needs some help.
Yeah.
And then, like, looked for somebody that could help and sent the help.
Yeah.
A lot of people would have just been like, well, not my problem, walked past my building.
Yeah. No, that is some heads up
yeah.
managering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, manager. I hope you get paid well. So the officer went and found him,
mm-hmm.
and Scott blew a 0.26 on a breath test.
Okay. Yeah.
So he also was very inebriated.
Yeah.
And with a bleeding cut in the mix, he was sent to the hospital to detox.
Yeah.
Eventually, Scott told police that he did not actually have any recollection of the night. He told them that he had given the story about the three men because he didn't actually have any version of events to give, and he just was scared. He didn't know what people were going to think. He didn't know what to say.
Yeah. He's talking it up for his buddies, saying that they got into a fight because they're asking about a cut and he can't remember and he doesn't want to say. I have yeah. no idea. Yeah.
He also said that it was possible that he and Luke had been near the water's edge. He said that it was possible that they had fought. He said that it was possible that Luke had tripped on cobbles. Huh. from it mostly just seems like it might be.
Yeah.
Fill in the blank. This he's just kind of throwing out potentials.
In this case, mm-hmm. when you have someone who's 18 years old mm-hmm. being interrogated by police or being interviewed by police, but mm-hmm. I'm guessing that this probably went on for quite a while. And he doesn't have much recollection of the night before.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these it may be's may also have been fed
leading
to him.
Questions do and you, saying, do you what think if it was this? And have? He can't say yes or
and
no.
And he can't yeah. say yes or no. So he says maybe, not realizing that it's going to be
some of this statement. Was direct things that he said, like. He said the last thing that he remembered was sitting at the Vibe. And he specifically said the phrase, like, right at the beginning of this, he said, last thing I remember sitting at the Vibe. And then he said, I could never leave him in the water.
Yeah.
And then they were like, well, how did he get in the water? And he did not have an answer for that.
Huh.
Police bloodhounds were able to track Scott. His scent from the Verge through Riverside Park and down to the water's edge at the spot where Luke's body had been recovered. For me, that's a little interesting mm-hmm. because dogs are not a hard and fast science. They yeah. can be used and they can be accurate. I think that people assume that they are a machine and that they give ultimate truth when in yeah. reality they can also be reacting to their handler a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically
to have a very like to have it be accurate to really know that there's not a whole lot, you need to have a handler and a dog that do not know the area mm-hmm. and have no information on anything. They are pure like met someone at one place given the scent and that everything from there yeah. is unfamiliar to them and they don't know where it's going to go because yeah. if the handler has any knowledge of the area, if they have been to anything, if it's an officer that has been to the site where the body's mm-hmm. recovered, they can easily
accidentally. It's not even necessarily an intentional thing. It can even yeah. be just a tell that we don't notice we have.
Yeah.
But a dog might notice.
Well, when the dog's like losing the scent. I mean, a lot of people might, if you have like a decently behaved dog and you take it on a walk, there's a lot of times where it almost feels like it knows where you wanted to walk beforehand. It's just picking up on little things like the way you're kind of facing as you're hitting corners or little mm-hmm. things like that. So easy to make it seem like the animal's coming up with the decision when really it's just cold reading you.
But I will also say, I think that scent animals yeah. can be used in a lot of very effective ways.
Yeah.
I'm not huge in police forces having dogs.
Yeah.
But I do know people who work specifically with search and rescue.
This area is very yeah. big for people training dogs for search and rescue.
And horses. We do a lot I know someone who has a search and rescue yeah. horse who does scent work.
We live near the backcountry. There's a lot of search and rescue operations around here, especially in the winter. And so, yeah, I mean, that's normal.
It's just one of those things where I'm like, it's a piece of evidence that I would not consider forensics necessarily, but worth keeping in mind.
Yeah, it can help in an investigation using it as a.
It would not be something that as a juror I would vote.
Yeah.
Any particular direction for that's not a.
But if it helped reliably lead them to something new they did mm-hmm. not know before, that's a great thing.
This the other seems thing though, I think is interesting is where they believe he went into the water. There are damaged cobblestones.
Yeah.
So maybe that snippet of a memory of him tripping.
Yeah.
It's not close enough to the water that he would have tripped on the cobblestones into the water.
Yeah.
But
maybe there's something
it makes
there.
You wonder if there are some memories in there that he's or.
Yeah.
I don't know. With all this evidence and especially the recorded interviews.
Yeah.
19-year-old Scott was charged with 2 counts of obstruction of justice and he pleaded no contest. He was sentenced to 48 hours in La Crosse County Jail and 1 year of probation. Scott admitted that initially he lied about his address and his date of birth and that he walked home.
Yeah. I mean, this seems
those are other things that it's like lying about your address and date of birth. Okay, maybe that's a scared kid
yeah.
who doesn't want to get in trouble with mom for drinking, but at the same time, maybe.
Yeah, it reads to me very much concerning. A scared kid thing,
mm-hmm.
but also if your friend is missing or anything like that, you would think that you would be as open and honest, because at that point, mm-hmm. any consequences to your underage drinking or
it's nothing.
Anything is nothing compared. Yeah. So it does cast some suspicions, but I also know plenty of, you know, kids who have been, you know, talked to by police while they were, you know, a minor in possession, and they lie about everything because they're just so terrified of yeah. anything coming back to them.
Yeah.
And they really, you know, the minor in possession ticket's going to be nothing.
Well, and like they said that during the interview, while he was still missing and not recovered.
Yeah.
They said at that interview, he seemed extremely nervous and upset.
Yeah.
And I kind of was like, I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, his friend's missing.
Yeah. If you don't have a memory, though, of what might have happened and you know your friend's missing.
Yeah. That's going to be stressful and upsetting. Yes.
But you'd also think you'd be like, I don't remember what happened and I really want to help.
So genuinely what I. Yeah. It's.
There's something there one way or another.
He insists, though, that, like, due to alcohol and sustaining a head injury, mm-hmm. there's nothing else. He's not lying about the rest. It's just not there, he says.
Yeah.
Scott had been friends with Luke for only about 5 weeks beforehand.
Okay.
His family didn't really know him.
Yeah.
They weren't, like, you know, BFFs necessarily. I mean, they were close because they had gone out and hung out a lot in yeah. recent months, but like college friends are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're talking about a kid you've known for the first semester.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he was an 18-year-old that just joined the team, and he was, you know, gravitating towards Luke. Luke was a nice guy. He was an includer.
Yeah.
The Holmans still feel that there is more to this than he just fell in.
Yeah.
It had been almost a running joke in their family to avoid the river.
Yeah.
Like, it was something that they said as a goodbye, kind of like our remember who you are and what you stand for.
Yeah.
And he disliked water. He hated swimming. He made comments to his friends about the waterfront and avoiding the waterfront. He was by nature a cautious person, even when he was drinking. His phone, which had been with him that night when the whole group had been together,
yeah,
was found in his room, under like in his bed or under his bed, something like that. His aunt says that she thinks that he got home and didn't know where, like, thought he lost his phone and went back to look.
Oh, yeah.
It's just...
I mean, that's...
There's some weird things.
There's definitely something there where I can see, like, he gets home, drops his phone or whatever, can't find it, and then thinks maybe he dropped it if him and his buddy got into a fight. You know, like, maybe there's just a little pushing and shoving and he tripped or whatever, and then he's thinking, oh, you know, I lost my phone at the park, and he went back to the park in that kind of a state, four times the legal limit. The only
thing is, at 0.32, he's
yeah
so incapacitated, I don't even know that, like how, I don't how see how he would be
another half mile
with it enough to look for his phone, realize it is missing, go back out and look for, like, I don't even think he would be.
That's the
he's like curl wet up your on the pants floor drunk. While
yeah trying to find your phone, and you just sleep it off on your floor with your phone 5 feet away, not realizing it's there.
Yeah, it just there's some weird things to me. Other friends who were with him that evening also felt that there was more at play than him just falling in.
Yeah,
one specifically remembers him commenting earlier that week about how he would just never go near the waterfront when drinking.
Yeah,
it was that comment that he made, like, it's obvious, even when you're drunk, if you're facing the river, turn around, there's nothing at the river, like, don't go there. Luke's family has pursued further investigation with the GDI team, which we discussed last week.
Yeah.
I do think that his mom's involvement in this case gives it the best chance of being solved, because, like I've said before, I think anybody who cares about the victims.
Yeah.
Keeping it fresh is going to give it the best chance of funding and attention and thought.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily feel that the GDI team participating has been part of that.
Facilitate that, yeah.
GDI has very clearly come in looking for what evidence they can make fit their narrative and not what does the evidence tell us.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that they're firm claiming him as a potential victim of a shadowy ring of serial killers decreases the chances of it ever getting the truth.
Yeah, no, it distracts from anything and sucks up all the oxygen.
When Luke's story is shared in so many of these articles, they don't even mention this whole picture. They don't mention anything else other than he mysteriously...
He's just another college-age young man that drowned mysteriously while intoxicated.
And they claim a smiley face showed up near the scene, but like...
Yeah, we've discussed in the past episode.
Yeah, we already went over that.
Yeah, no, that's...
Is it the same smiley face even that they're claiming a bunch of times? Because a lot of these are just in a close enough geographic area. It's a city. You literally, like, can't get that far from a smiley face.
Yeah.
If there's one, then suddenly it's nearby all of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think because it was picked up and co-opted by the GDI people who may have remembered something, like they saw something and they just didn't realize what they witnessed.
Yeah.
They might have completely written that out of their brains because they were looking for a serial killer, not a couple of drunk college kids having a drunk fight,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Who didn't witness something but want to be involved in this.
Yeah.
They will come forward and have a whole lot of things to say and detract resources away from the actual investigation.
Yeah, they'll muddy those waters so quickly.
I think the increased attention on a supposed potential suspect will make sure that the only person that might actually know something is a lot less likely to open their mouths about it.
Yeah.
Because why would you?
That's any time that it gets in the media, like a possible suspect gets brought up too early. I feel like that's always a big potential problem. Where people go, well, my information doesn't really help because I don't know.
Like, it has nothing to do with
that
yeah.
specifically. So my information is probably not helpful and they just don't say well, anything and if at it's, all.
If, say, Scott remembers something.
Yeah.
Or maybe he remembered something all along and was scared to share it.
Yeah.
Or maybe he... There's just so many potentials. If you have somebody, some shadowy figure to take the blame.
Oh, yeah. It's way easier to
why
just.
Why would you ever come forward? Mm-hmm. You know? And I know his parents have begged because they just want to know what happened. They don't feel like it was. They don't feel like it was an accidental drowning. There are some pieces of evidence that they've reviewed as well, too. Like they had. The GDI team. Has a promotion thing, of course.
Yeah.
And part of it is going over these cases, and they have their own, like, celebrity forensics team covering these cases. And they actually did have somebody look at Luke's autopsy photos.
Okay.
And there, it did seem that there... Okay. What they said they saw was a shoe print on his head.
Okay.
And other signs that would indicate that the post-mortem or the injuries that were on his body were not post-mortem.
They're pre-mortem.
They were, yeah, pre-mortem. Okay. So, like, maybe an altercation very quickly, like, very soon before death.
Yeah.
So, they presented that to the police department. They're trying to get it re-looked into.
Okay.
Which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is, again, because it's through the GDI crew, even if it's valid information, even if that examiner is correct, even if they did see something that the first medical examiner missed,
the
plausibility is gone.
Yeah, it pushes, like, it almost makes it seem like people, if they want to accept this new... What like the possibility of the new information, they kind of have to follow the rest of the logic the GDI team is putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that makes it very difficult. That like kind of muddies the thing because you want to be able to like maybe re-examine some of that evidence without necessarily adopting their full conclusion.
Exactly. And yeah, Bill Shostak was the father of a young man named Josh, who disappeared in Albany, New York in December of 2007. He had gone out drinking with friends. He became separated from them and was later discovered drowned in the Hudson River. For several years after Josh's death, Bill was connected with the GDI investigators, and you can find interviews with all of them from around that time.
Yeah.
Bill passed away in 2019, never knowing what happened to his son. He believed Josh's death to be a murder until his passing, but which I kind of looked into that one, mm-hmm. and it's interesting, and I can see why he did not feel comfortable with the designation it got.
Yeah.
There's definitely some weird stuff in that one too.
Okay.
There are a lot of these that I can see where closing it on accidental drowning would not feel comfortable as a family member.
Yeah.
There's
enough questions.
That's
kind of leave it open. Yeah.
It's an answer that's not really an answer, but it's making it so that you can never ask the question again.
Yeah.
Might as well leave it open.
Yeah.
But when asked about GDI's Detective Gannon, who is like, I mean, they're all the original people.
Yeah.
He said this: I feel like Kevin is like a sponge. He latches onto the families, sucks the life out of them. And when he has nothing else to suck, he dumps them. Do I think he's re-victimized families and done more harm than good? Yes, I do. And that's a shame. And for me, that is what speaks most to me. A family member who was part of their show circuit.
Yep.
That kind of got wise to it.
Yeah.
And is able to see from a perspective that I can't, because I have not experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to
sniff out the bullshit.
Call it for what it was. He was a fire investigator, for his whole career.
Yeah.
So he was very familiar with investigational skills and practices, and he just...
Yeah, he could see...
None of it. A retired Milwaukee homicide detective named Steven Spingola also said in 2017 that after reviewing 31 of the smiley face claimed cases, he felt that there were actually probably only a few that were worth reinvestigating, that he could conceivably see being murder cases. One of them that he brought up specifically that stood out to him was Luke's case.
Huh, okay.
He specifically mentioned the shoes or the blood on his feet.
Yeah.
But he did also feel that most of them were probably not solvable with the passing of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the time when it's most solvable got used up.
Yeah. It's very, very difficult with cases like this with so little physical evidence. Like, you really do have to rely on.
Well, and people's memories change.
Yeah.
Like, the.
Well, they can be tainted pretty hard with this kind of media coverage.
Exactly. It's just. Yeah. And seeing potentially solvable cases getting, just steamrolled to sell books. I just can't imagine how frustrating.
Yeah.
I don't think theorizing in itself is dangerous.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a natural human instinct.
Yeah.
I think we naturally want to come up with potential solutions to a problem that we don't have the rest of the answers to.
Yeah.
That's just kind of how we work. And I think that there have been cases that have been caught by people noticing patterns. I think there have been a lot of great leaps made forward by people who volunteer their time to do research.
Yeah.
What I think is actually the real issue is claiming that your intent is to uncover the most truth and give closure while simultaneously muddying the water and rolling cases into your, what works for you, what supports you.
Yeah.
Instead of supporting the case, regardless of how it may relate to you. Like if you come into that picture and you tell that family you want to give them truth, and instead you're using them for media purposes.
For marketing.
Yeah. And then dropping them when it is no longer beneficial. You're taking a profit off of that. That's a true crime. That's a crime. That's gross. That's disgusting.
Yeah, when you're profiting off crime and hurting coming investigations. From a
position of power, too.
Yeah.
Because they have those credentials behind their names. And I'm not saying that armchair, the podcast hosts are more qualified than them. That's not what I am saying.
Yeah.
But I am saying that I think we've got to be careful with what we accept as a trend.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to slow our roll on getting carried away on some of these things, because the things that get caught up in those role or in that role is people. It's real people and real cases and real families who have real pain and real grief.
It's also kind of the flooding the field with shit kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Like every time someone comes in with credentials and tries to use those to provide their own investigation, and then they're not actually doing good investigative work, it takes so much away from the families as far as their resources.
Yeah, and their emotional bandwidth, and too.
It stalls the rest of the investigation because you have all this other information that then they have to disprove as well, because everyone's going to latch onto it.
And I think that it also has taken the power away of, like, I think that families being involved in the cases of their loved ones are hugely powerful. I think that that is a huge, that's a mark in someone's favor if they have someone earthside to be fighting for them.
Yeah.
And I think that makes me very angry that that power was kneecapped.
Yeah. That someone
because of association.
Yeah. Come
that
in and
sucks.
And take that energy away from it. Suck it all and away the power, from the family. Yeah. And the power away from the family. Yeah.
I do think it's worth noting that even with their efforts being kneecapped to a certain extent.
Yeah.
These families were able to put on the pressure for increased CCTV in these areas.
Yeah.
A lot of these different towns that were involved, as they saw more drownings, began to have people patrol the water's edge. Oh, nice. There were volunteers that started patrolling the water's edge during like busy college nights. I think that it's pointed to sometimes that there was a higher rate of drownings during a certain period of time, and then it decreased. I saw in an interview, one, like the college journalist, was like, well, I mean, I wouldn't think it was anything, but they stopped. And that seems to point to me that there was maybe something else at work. But for me, I see that as that's people who loved those young men who didn't want to see other families go through that, who saved lives.
Yeah, that pushed.
We will never know how many lives they saved.
Yeah. No, that's awesome that the families, not just pushing in the investigation, but pushing the communities to be able to take actions that prevent it from happening.
Yeah, preventative
again.
Measures.
That's, yeah, really, really cool.
I did also want to, I had been kind of digging around in local news.
Yeah.
And there were some comments, too, where they talked about how drinking is a bigger problem on some of these campuses than others.
Mm-hmm.
And binge drinking has been a really, it's a big health problem for the college demographic in general.
Yeah.
Luke seemed like a genuinely good-hearted person.
Yeah.
At a vigil in his honor, one high school classmate talked about how Luke found out that he had another teammate who wanted to play basketball with them and everything. He'd made it on the team but couldn't pay his dues, like the team fees or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he paid him.
Oh, that's right.
Because he was like, well, that's not a good reason to not play. And so he made sure his friend could. He was an includer. He specifically made a point of like talking with a quieter student that was kind of a wallflower.
Yeah.
And she talked about how that was at a time of her life where it was very informative, or like it was very formative for her to just be acknowledged every day.
Yeah.
When she was trying to find where she fit in. He also had like a college ball coach who, I guess before a big game, so he'd had to bring his kid, his little kid who was in like second grade at the time.
Yeah.
And obviously he was pretty busy because there was a lot going on, and he realized he didn't know where his his kid was, and he like went and looked for him in the team rooms and stuff. And he was just chilling with Luke, and Luke was like trying to make him feel really cool and like he was really like one of the cool guys to be on this trip instead of it being a boring work trip. And so from like that point forward, he every time his dad would tell the story, he'd just be like, I was just chilling with Luke, Dad.
Yeah.
Like, it was just cute. So for the cause of the week, I chose something called Every Kid Sports.
Okay. That sounds like a good one.
At Every Kid Sports, we believe every kid deserves the chance to play sports. Why? The positive impact and outcomes experienced through participation. That's why. Be it social connection, mental and emotional well-being, or physical development, so much is in play. The number one barrier keeping kids from income-restricted families out of youth sports is cost. By paying the registration fees required for youth sports participation, we're providing access to everyone and everything in play. So that's what we are going to be donating towards in Luke's honor today.
I like that.
And if you would like to participate in that cause of the week, you can do so at everykidsports.org.
Perfect. That's a really good one. Yeah.
I like that one. That story really, like,
Yeah.
He seems like somebody who would have been a really great coach.
Yeah.
Do you have a story?
I do. It's a small one.
Oh, good, because I don't.
So, I found microwavable bow. If you don't know what bow is, I mean, you know what bow is.
Yeah, but I know for what bow is because you just ate it.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Chinese steamed buns. They usually have like barbecue pork in the middle of it. And I found some at the grocery store. It's really exciting. Allison doesn't eat meat. Big doesn't eat meat, but Little eats meat. And so I was excited to share some bow with her today. So treats. I microwaved, you know, a couple bao buns, and I was enjoying mine and gave one to her to enjoy. And she goes, I don't know if I'm going to like this. And I was like, just try one bite. And she tried one bite and she goes, no, I don't like this. I was like, okay, that's fine. And then a couple minutes later, she goes, well, I'll just keep eating it in case. In case.
I guarantee you what happened was she made up her mind and didn't actually try it.
Yep.
Then eventually decided to try it. Realized she had spoken too soon and was like, well, I can't let this go though.
Yeah. So just in case she ate half of it and enjoyed it.
Just in case she liked it. That's cute. I too sometimes make a gut reaction that I then later I'm like, well, that was wrong.
See, I don't say the no part, but I'll just eat it just in case. You never know.
In case you like it.
Yeah.
Do you want to help me with socials?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to find us and follow us on Twitter, it's at This Is Awful Pod. I run the Twitter. I'm not very good at Twitter. I mostly use it for, you know, sports ball and politics on my personal account. But I would love to see some interactions over there. And I've had a few in the past couple of weeks. And that's very nice.
You like us. You really like us.
But yeah, go and find us and follow us over there. You can also find and follow us on Instagram at This Is Awful Podcast. Allison runs that. Typically, it's hot memes. It's been a little bit not it's so much sporadic. Hot memes. Mostly.
Or featuring unidentified, like Jane Doe's and John Doe's, stuff like that.
But, you know, it's always a good follow. And I mean, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I won't overpost.
No, that's you're never at risk of overposts. There'll always be good posts. If you want to be one of our awful waffles and support us on Patreon and give us money each month to put out into our causes of the week, which is where all that money from Patreon goes. You can do that at patreon.com/thisisawfulpod. And then we'll send you some free swag every once in a while. We're going to do a lot more like, we'll do like behind the scenes stuff, but we're real boring.
Well, that was before we realized one, we're not comfortable profiting from this.
Yeah.
And two, that means that this is an unpaid job.
Yeah.
And three, I spend a lot more time researching than I thought I was going to.
If we showed you behind-the-scenes stuff with us, it would be me sitting quietly on the couch while Allison is doing work. And me interrupting her often with TikToks. So, not that fun.
I mean, we always have... Listen, guys. Someday, when we have one less job between us...
Only one less.
Only one less. I literally think we'd become more entertaining with just one less job. Probably, yeah. So if that ever happens, I'll up my entertainment level just for you guys.
Perfect. If you want to buy some stuff that Allison created, and it's printed on any kind of product you can imagine, and that's well, with okay, our new not designs. Any. Okay, most any. And with her hot new designs, which I love, and I'm getting a Swears Ahead hat. Like as soon as I can, because that's so perfect. But go check out those designs at our Spreadshirt shop, which is shop.spreadshirt.com/this-is-awful-podcast or this-is-awful-podcast.shop.spreadshirt. Or yeah, click the link in the show notes. That's probably the easiest way. Yeah.
Have you been putting the link tree in there that I made? I made a link tree.
No, you guys. Made a link tree and I haven't. You need to give it to me so I can do that.
I'm really advanced in the world of technology these days.
But yeah, I think that's all the socials. So
yeah, did we say Facebook group?
Oh no, come and join us on our Facebook group where we discuss stuff. Do that by searching on Facebook for This Is Awful, a true crime discussion group.
So with all that said, remember who you are and what you stand for.
And don't die.
Love you guys, be good.